Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. Websites to access our program, HagmanReportLive.com, HagmanReportLive.com. And then there you'll have the full video, the audio and such, HagmanReport.com for show prep and what have you. I just have four words to say to you. Four words. Actually, five with a contraction in between, right? Don't mess with me. No, I'm not Nancy Pelosi. Eric the Tech, did you happen to see that? Don't mess with me today. You probably didn't have a chance. Nancy Pelosi snapped at a reporter today who asked if she hates Donald Trump. Now, there were two press conferences today, one at 9 o'clock a.m. and then, of course, her regular press conference thereafter. And the regular press conference, the first press conference, it was difficult for me to watch. It was difficult to watch where she invoked the founding fathers, comparing Donald Trump to, in my view anyway, or at least what I got out of it, was this leader bowing to a foreign power, bowing to a king and echoing comparing, in my view, Congress in the separation of powers, breaking free from the king in this disobedience from the crown, again, echoing 1776. I would urge her to study history a little bit closer, but then again, you know, today she said the president leaves us with no choice but to act, sadly. And I laughed at this, but with confidence and humility, I would say with hatred, not humility, confidence because it's partisan. She said, with allegiance to our founders. Okay. Which founders are those? In a heart full of love for America today, I'm asking our chairman to proceed with the articles of impeachment. So let me get this straight. No, that was 9 o'clock this morning. So let me get this straight. You've got no evidence. You presented no fact witnesses or material witnesses. Everything is hearsay. There was no quid pro quo. We went from a meddling in the 2016, we went from Russiagate, Spygate, that is. Russiagate was turned into Spygate. Well, you know what I'm talking about. So we went from there to obstruction, and then obstruction of Congress, obstruction of justice, and then, of course, Ukraine, and a quid pro quo of which there was none. And then we were treated with this litany of this sideshow by Adam Schiff, pencil neck geek. Obviously had some issues all throughout school, I would suspect, acting out today on those issues against President Trump, along with the clown car contingent of leftists. I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to read something here. This is from our second hour guest. I got a great show lined up for you today. First hour guest, Keith Hansen. Second hour guest, Brendan House. You're going to want to Both segments are going to be just absolutely incredibly chock full of information. But let me invoke something from Winston Churchill here. I want you all to think about this. If you will not fight for the right when you can easily win without bloodshed, if you will not fight when your victory will be sure and not too costly, you may come to the moment when you will have to fight with all the odds against you and only a small chance of survival. There may even be a worse case. You may have to fight when there is no hope of victory, because it is better to perish than to live as slaves. That was Winston Churchill. We'll be talking about that in the second hour, but that is the theme, I believe, in this, for this program. This country right now is in the fight for her very survival. We are soldiers in this fight. If you are sitting this out, in my view, if you're sitting this out, if you're on the couch, if you're not involved, if you're not engaged, then you're not, then what are you doing? What are you doing? The question, of course, that triggered Pelosi, and just Eric the Tech, give me a heads up when I'm joined by him. All right, so what's that? Yeah, no worries. Take your time. Eric the Tech needs like a third, fourth arm and many things. I'm telling you what, I love the guy. Wow, is he talented. But man, he's, you know, under the weight of about six computers. I don't know how he, this is what the other thing too, I don't know how he keeps track of, you know, these things, mice on the, which one goes to which computer, and soundboards and cables and duct tape, a lot of duct tape. But anyway, Pelosi. You know, James Rosen from the Sinclair Broadcasting Group asked Pelosi the question about if she hates President Trump. Don't mess with me was her response. Well, Nancy, I don't think you answered the question. First of all, anyone think that she looked like Morticia or, you know, death warmed over during that 9 o'clock press conference? Kind of like a skull with a skin, like a layer of skin over the skull and a wig. I'm telling you, looking at her and hearing her speak. Look, I'm not making fun of her appearance. No, not at all. I'm just saying, man, definition of road hardened, put away wet. I mean, give it up already, Nancy. And second of all, invoke would be the right word. The founding fathers here. You're on the wrong side of this argument, I do believe. Attempting to reverse the will of half of the population, more than half of the population of America. Attempting to erase our vote. You still can't get over the results of a 3-year-old election. And if anyone is meddling in the 2020 election, it is you and the left and the clown car of leftists, Marxists, communists in this. It's unbelievable. Keith, you're going to have to hit the video button on your Skype. Before I bring him on, I want to just mention again, folks, if you haven't done so already, I got to tell you, our coffee's out. Remember this, HagmanStore.com, HagmanStore.com, HagmanStore.com. One more time, HagmanStore.com. Coffee's out right now. Either you got three different choices, three different blends, that is, and three different variety or kinds of each blend. You've got the K-cups, you've got the whole bean, and you've got the ground. Now, the three different blends are Patriot, Revolution, and Detective's Choice. The Detective's Choice, let me tell you something, has a big kick, caffeine kick to it. It's extra caffeinated. Proceeds. Now, this is important because I saw a comment on our YouTube channel. It's more money than Costco or Sam's Club or Walmart. Yes. And I'm going to tell you why. Because the proceeds, a portion of the proceeds, keeps this program on the air. The other significant portion of the proceeds goes to organizations, legitimate organizations, that fight human trafficking. And yes, we have it set up through a CPA for audit purposes. HagmanStore.com. Three different coffees. Holidays are coming up. You want something to serve? I'm going to tell you something. I drink Detective's Choice all of the time. All right. Keith Hansen, conservative talk show host Keith Hansen. So, Keith Hansen, so out of the gate, don't mess with me.
I would never do that.
Well, I was just trying to be like Nancy Pelosi.
Can you hear me okay?
Huh?
Okay.
I'm all kidding. Right. Yeah, all right. Gotcha.
You got me panic. You did get me. I'm listening to you talk about the Hagman coffee.
Yeah, you like that?
I think it's great. I mean, I want something that, I mean, literally just grabs me, slaps me around the room a couple of times. I like strong, full bodied, you know, I like my coffee like I like my women, dark and bitter.
Well, I got you half covered. I got the dark portion not covered. Bitter, not so much. I got to tell you something, Keith, and this is true. Eric the Tech, myself, we work with this roaster. This roaster is probably, in my view, like he's like an artist with coffee. Okay. And he's down in the southern state. And, I'm sure 3 months, well, far over 3 months, we worked with him to get all three blends, but specifically the Detective's Choice just right. And, because I wanted something very heavy bodied, strong in that thing. But heavily caffeinated, twice as much caffeine. But here's what I asked him. With a hint of cherry blossoms and just a touch of sweet cocoa aftertaste.
Nice. You want to have it well rounded. That sounds good. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We've got a number of coffee roasters up here, new coffee roasters up in New Hampshire. And, you know, you think back to the middle, late 90s when the micro brews were coming out, the craft brews, and you had all these different, all these different breweries that were coming out, all these different flavors. And now this artisan coffee trend, is starting to come into its own, and it's great. I love it. I'm a big coffee aficionado. I start my day off with a couple of cups of coffee and I love it. Unfortunately now I think I've just become desensitized to caffeine. I can mainline coffee and I just don't get that buzz. So I'm always looking for the next thing that's bigger, stronger. That's just a little bit more of a kick in the pants. So.
Well, yeah, throw a few lines. Don't be doing blow off the back end of a DeLorean now, you know, going back to the 80s, to get your mainlining stuff. But, you know, no, seriously, I can drink coffee and go to sleep. I don't know. It's because back in the day, you know, working 24/7 on EMS, with EMS and stuff, you pound the coffee, you'd go on a call, you come back, you know, you'd work 24 on, 24 off, and it's just, pretty soon it just has no effect on you, you know? So my adrenals are burned out. But I gotta tell you, this, Detective's Choice, I'm gonna send you some, and you tell me how you like it, because
I would love to try it.
It would, hang on. Folks, talk among yourselves for a minute. So do you want K-cups or whole bean or ground?
Oh, whole bean. Absolutely.
Whole bean. Okay. Yep. What we do is attempt to get it to you within 3 to 4 days of the actual roasting. It's roasted in small batches. So whole bean. Okay.
Yep.
I'm writing this down. Okay. I'm writing my whole bean. Okay. 1 pound. Okay. Detective Joyce. All right. Here you go. Process that order. Okay. We got it. Okay. All right.
I'll tell you one thing that you might want to consider is doing green beans for people who roast at home, because there is nothing better than taking green beans, roasting them yourself at home, and going from the roaster to the grinder to either, I prefer a French press, that's why I like to grind my own, but going from green bean to roaster, roaster to grinder to French press, all, you know, in short succession. It is truly the best way to enjoy a cup of coffee.
I do like French press. I think it works the best. And I got to tell you, the green bean part of this, I'm not sure how we'd get the green beans, defrosted, you know, from the green beans. Don't you have to pick them? I don't like green beans. I mean, lima beans, green beans. Oh, coffee beans.
Coffee beans.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just,
if you're going to do green beans, then you got to French cut them and you need almond slices.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's just a poor presentation.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah. Enough of this. See, these jokes don't land. I'm not a comedian. I'll tell you that. I'm not even a talk show host. So, all right. So here we
should take the show on the road. This is perfect.
Yeah. I mean, we'll be here all week, right?
People would pay 50 cents for this. Absolutely.
And demand their money back. Twice their money back. all right, Keith. Look, I read a statement. I'm not sure if you heard it at the beginning. Winston Churchill said this. If you will not fight for the right when you can easily win without bloodshed, if you will not fight when your victory will be sure and not too costly, you may come to the moment when you will have to fight with all the odds against you and only a small chance of survival. That there may be even be a worst case. You may have to fight when there is no hope of victory because it's better to perish than to live as slaves. I'll tell you what, Keith, I'm seeing it. This is where we are right now in my view.
Mm-hmm. I mean, no, I would agree. And I just over the weekend watched The Patriot again. And, you know, you think about it. I'm listening to you read that statement from Winston Churchill, and I'm thinking how relevant that was back during the Revolutionary War period, that these people pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honors to bring about something that was bigger than them as individuals, that it was better to die a free man than it was to live as a subject or a slave. And you look at what's happening right now, and, you know, I've said this many, many times on my own program that this is nothing more than a projected confession from the left. And we've talked about this before on your show, that Donald Trump is guilty of one thing, absolutely, absolutely guilty of one thing, and that is he won an election that he was not supposed to win. So now we create the narrative that Donald Trump is guilty of X, Y, and Z, and we literally run the gamut trying to find something that will fit that narrative. It's not, okay, well, is there an issue here? What's the issue? Let's see what it is. The issue is he is guilty of collusion. He's guilty of treason. He's guilty of all of these things. And now let's find a way to make that stick. Let's flip every single rock. Let's turn over every single board. Let's investigate everything that we possibly can to make that narrative stick. And it bears repeating that whenever you hear a progressive Democrat making an accusation, you can absolutely positively take it to the bank that it is a confession.
It's a right. And I like your word confession better than projection. Both are applicable here. But you're right. It damn well is a confession. My question is, how is half the American population, maybe it's not half, but how are so many people bamboozled by these talking points? Are they brainwashed? Are they can't just be misinformed, because in my view, if you believe that President Trump is guilty of a crime, especially a high crime and misdemeanor as defined by the impeachment, or as would be applied by the impeachment process, mm-hmm. you are either misinformed or you're a moron. And you know, look, sorry for calling people morons, but no, I'm not. I mean, seriously, how can somebody say with a straight face, because it was, you know what? I was able to absolutely verify this. 19 minutes after his inauguration, the Washington Post came out and said, impeachment begins. And you know who said that? Mark Zaid, the attorney for the alleged whistleblower, whose name we can't say. But it took 19 minutes for the word impeachment and Donald Trump to come out in the mainstream. So it was their objective all along. 19 minutes after his inaugural address, he was, you know, brought in. I mean, what the heck?
Well, for the better part of the past two and what, three quarter years now, it's been nothing but attempt after attempt after attempt to smear and besmirch and to essentially undo the 2016 election, because he won an election that he was not supposed to win. That's what he's guilty of. That's the bottom line. He's guilty of winning an election that he was not supposed to win. So the effort now becomes A, to undo that 2016 election, and B, to ensure that he does not get reelected. And I don't remember who it was who said it, but somebody said something to them, and I'm paraphrasing, we have to impeach this MF-er, otherwise he's going to get reelected.
It was Al Green, I believe.
Okay, yeah. So, there's the perfect example of how we have to throw up every possible roadblock. And I mean, ultimately what it boils down to is that the progressive agenda has been blocked. And I remember when I was broadcasting in Florida, and I was on your show, and we were talking about when the Code Pink activists were standing up. Barack Obama, this is going back when you had the Reid, Pelosi, and Obama trifecta there. And you had the radical leftists that were screaming, you know, in essence, you have the power, you have the trifecta, take control. And I think we've gotten into, I've certainly gotten into on my media, the differences between, you know, the Obamas and, when I say the Obamas, I mean, I'm talking members of his regime and the progressive candidates of today. These people were legislative. They were radicals, absolutely. But there's a difference between the insurgent radical and the legislative radical. And Pelosi and certainly when Harry Reid was in power and Barack Obama, they are legislative radicals. They seek the fundamental destruction of America as we know it. Remember when Obama said 5 days before the election, we're 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Yep.
That was a coup via legislation. We are going to use the power of the judiciary and the power of the legal branches to bring about this change. And this wasn't radical enough for the radicals. This wasn't extreme enough for the radicals. They wanted that insurgency. They wanted to have a literal overthrow.
I believe, yeah, I believe you're right.
And so and when you look at the legislative radicals as well, too. You and I were talking off air about this yesterday. One of the most frightening things is to see how in the 8 years of Barack Obama, the intelligence community and the prosecutorial segment of our law enforcement community has been weaponized. There's no other way to put it, especially our intelligence community. Our intelligence community has been weaponized. Unfortunately, the intelligence community has not been weaponized for the benefit of the country as a constitutional republic.
Correct.
It's been weaponized to bring about, to usher in an era of transformation, that fundamental transformation of our country that Obama spoke about. And whether or not that is, you know, I don't believe it is for the advancement of the sovereignty of this country. I believe it is for the assimilation of this country into the fabric of a global governance.
I believe you're right. If one contemplates what you just said, that is chilling. Think about that. Because that means that what you're telling me right now, what you just said for the fabrication of a global government, the establishment of a global government, would mean that the United States must be completely subjugated, and I know our listeners and viewers know this, to a world authority. But that means that our constitutional republic has to be utterly and thoroughly destroyed, right?
Correct. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because the individual has no place in the grand scheme of things and whatever it is. I can't tell you what the grand scheme is. I don't know what the grand vision is of ultimately what this is. But the individual in and of itself, I mean, go back to Marx. From each according to his ability, to each according to their need. So you're nothing more than a cog in a wheel of production that supports the collective. And your value, Your value as a person, your value, the value of your life, for instance, is determined and assessed by your ability to keep producing. You're nothing more than, I hate to tie it into the Matrix, but I mean, you know, when you look at the movie The Matrix, what were human beings? They were nothing more than energy generation cells for a larger entity. And once they no longer had the advice. Eric chuckling.
No, it's me. I said you're right.
Once the human being no longer has the ability to produce that electrical energy for the larger being, it gets expunged. When you look at the healthcare system, especially over in Great Britain. You know, when you talk about if you remember Alfie and Charlie Gard, these were individuals, these were people, human beings, living, sentient, breathing beings who were determined to be non-viable by the state.
Yep.
And therefore no money would be spent to keep them alive because they had no production value. If you have no production value, why would we waste resources on you when those resources could be allocated to somebody else who does have production value?
Kind of like the obsolete man in the Twilight Zone. I think it was that episode of the Twilight Zone.
Great episode.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
You know, we've talked about this before. Now, here we are today. And I've got really kind of one big question. Why are we here today? Not the Gramsci Marxist, the infiltration. I mean, I get that. Why are we still here today after 3 years? 1,050? What is this day number? I've been keeping track here. I don't know, whatever it is, of the Donald J. Trump presidency. Why hasn't he come down and said, look, you guys are out. Okay. You're fired. You're out. And, you come in and replace them. Hey, Christopher Wray, what are you doing? You certainly haven't done the FBI any favors. You're out. Bring someone else in, appoint someone else. He's well within his executive authority to do that. Why in the hell haven't we seen him, I'm playing in a sense devil's advocate here. Why haven't we seen any friggin' perp walks, any frog marches of these deep state denizens that are trying to take her, have taken our country down? Why haven't we seen the campaign promise, lock her up, done? Why? And don't tell me to trust, be patient and trust somebody, you know, trust the plan. Don't tell me that.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's frustrating. It's frustrating for you. It's frustrating for a lot of people. It's frustrating for me to see that. I hate to bring up the trust me thing. I'll try not to invoke that.
Yeah, I know. I know I'm going to get a hell of a ton of emails on that.
One of the things that I've said to people is when it comes to what Trump does, sit back and just watch, because I believe that there is a bigger plan here. He's smart. Listen, he's a smart guy. You may not like him. And I had a very interesting conversation with somebody last week about this. They didn't like Trump. This person didn't like Trump. And I said, well, what is it? Do you don't like his policy? Well, I don't like his personality and I don't like the way he tweets. I said, okay, so that's fine. Okay. You're entitled to not like him as a person.
Right, right.
But is he doing a bad job as president? Well, no, he's not. Okay, so are you judging him based on his behavior? And trust me, you want to talk about Twitter? I know all about Twitter because I have spent the past 2 months getting hammered in my home state over this damn social media outlet. I don't care. I don't care what people think about what I put out on my social media, because anybody who looks at my social media knows that I am never proactively nasty to somebody. I will react and I will respond, but I never go after people proactively.
Yeah, I've never seen that of you.
But that being said, I mean, and even if I did, the bottom line is, okay, judge me by the overall end result of what I have done. You know, not because of one or two things that I put out on social media that you may happen to disagree with. And that's the bottom line. There's people who just don't like this guy because they don't like his personality. Okay, that's great. You don't have to like everybody, but there is a difference between personal feelings and professional respect. And there are people who I absolutely dislike personally, who I have tremendous professional respect for because they're very good at what they do. Conversely, there are people who I like personally, who I think are absolutely inept and have no business doing what they're doing.
I agree.
You have to be able to draw the line between personal and professional. Now, that being said, you look at what happened during Thanksgiving. Donald Trump is a master manipulator of the media, and I think he does take some degree of devilish pleasure in it, to be honest.
I do too, by the way.
He sends out a fake motorcade to a golf course to get all the media on the fact that he's going golfing on Thanksgiving, and meanwhile, what is he doing? He's heading over to the Middle East to Afghanistan, to a hot zone, to be able to serve Thanksgiving dinner and spend time with our troops, him and First Lady Melania. I think it was brilliant. I mean, the media once again has gotten played, but the media has painted themselves in that corner because they don't vet their information. And if it's salacious and juicy, we're going to run with it without vetting it.
Unless it's Epstein and stuff. It's Epstein and Prince Andrew, you know, the guy that sweats like a pig. Okay. Sorry, but that's the depiction. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go on.
Yeah, they got played. I loved it. I'm glad you brought that up because a lot of people don't realize how bad they did. That was great.
Yep. No, he absolutely played them. And I've used the analogy before. It's like, you know, Donald Trump is the guy with the laser pointer and the media are the cats. You ever play with a laser pointer and cats? It's great. I mean, you sit there and you laugh at the stupidity of this cat because it's chasing this red dot around the floor. But that's the media. And here's the interesting thing about the social media aspect on this, okay? This guy picks up a cell phone, puts out 140 or so characters, and it's breaking news.
Yep. Isn't that great, by the way?
It is great, to be honest. It's great the fact that, you know, that the commander-in-chief has direct contact with the voter base, with the population of this country. But, you know, it's also unprecedented because we've never had this. We've never had technology to the point where the president of the United States can do something so quickly and have it reach so many people in such a short period of time. So, you know, this is unprecedented.
But hold that thought for a second, because let me throw this in here for you. Have you thought about this? Because when I was looking at Obama in the second term, I had identified a core group of, I mean, like 3,000 people. Who were assigned to the digital army under Obama. They were doing that for him on social media, on Twitter and Facebook. So just kind of keep that in the back of your mind as you continue. I just want to throw that out there, although Obama kept his hands clean.
Well, I do have a question, and that is, are these the same tech-savvy experts who couldn't get the healthcare.gov website running despite how many millions of dollars did they put into that?
No, these were Muppets. Seriously, these were volunteer Muppets, most of them with no job, posting in support of Obama on Twitter and Facebook. That's all. It was stupid, but it wasn't. When I say digital army, maybe that's too generous of a term. A bunch of stained T-shirt wearing Muppets in their mom's basement, but nonetheless, it was there. Go on.
Oh, you remember Coco Boy? Remember the kid in the pajama pants sitting there? Let's sip some hot cocoa.
Yeah.
And let's talk about all the wonderful benefits of Obamacare. Oh, geez.
Sadly, yes. And thanks for getting that image in my head again.
Yeah. That's all. It had to be. It had to be. Okay. But you know, and this is going to continue. What's going to happen with the moving forward with articles of impeachment? Are they going to be successful? I don't think so. You know, the question is whether or not Republicans are actually going to grow a spine.
Well, wait a second. Successful? How do you define success? Are they going to be successful? Successful what? Removing him? No, I don't think so. But impeaching him? Sure, they're going to impeach him. I guarantee flipping to you, they're going to impeach him.
Well, I mean, the end result of it would be the attempt to get him removed from office.
Right, but that's,
you know, or to somehow, some way render him ineligible for 2020. Are they going to be successful in that?
No.
But again, I'll say this as the, as you got my, my Twitter page up here where it says Sullivan County Republican Committee Chair, as the former Sullivan County Republican Committee Chair,
well,
I resigned and I resign. I will. Well, I haven't, to be honest with you, I haven't touched that page since the Robert Spencer event.
I know, because
I've been so disgusted with the whole thing. But I will tell you, I resigned my position as Sullivan County Republican Committee Chair because I was disgusted at the behavior of people who were supposed to be endeavoring to champion the causes of liberty and individual freedom and personal responsibility. And yet they were doing none of that what Republicans have been doing, especially Republicans in my area, they have been throwing themselves at the altar of progressivism and seeking whatever they need to do as an act of contrition to gain the approval of the progressive Democrat left.
Okay.
If that makes any sense whatsoever.
It does. And it's sad when you, to me, that's sad.
Republicans want to be liked.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And you know what? Nice guy, nice guys finish last. Well, nice guys do finish last. Well, the meek shall inherit the earth. No, the meek are going to get steamrolled.
Exactly.
We are literally in, I mean, obviously not a guns and bullets and bayonets war, but we are in a war for this country right now.
Not yet,
against
by the way.
A movement that is almost decentralized. The progressive movement is really decentralized. It doesn't have it really is an effective grassroots movement.
But okay, now that takes me to something that that Mophead yesterday said, Professor Mophead, I guess to me, said in that panel of four professors. I don't remember her name. Didn't she say something about conservatives can't stand to be around one another? And she said the opposite of what you're saying, but I believe what you're saying is more true than what she said, if that makes a difference. Can you help me out here?
I don't recall the statement.
Oh, but, I'll look it up here. But anyway, go ahead. Continue.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I've said ever since, you know, really since watching the reelection efforts for Barack Obama, that campaign to get him reelected for a second term, you can have a group of progressive Democrats, socialists, whatever, Marxists, whatever you want to call them. You can have a group of people, and if you take 10 points, they could disagree on 10 points. They could find solidarity in one point, and they'll work together to advance that one particular point, despite not agreeing with each other on the other 9 points.
Right.
Now, you take conservatives and you take Republicans, and you know, it is almost as if conservatives, Republicans are looking for their ideological equal. We could agree on 9 things. We could disagree on 1 point, but I will not permit myself to work with you because of your viewpoint on that one thing. You know, despite the fact that we agree and find solidarity on 9 of those 10 points, that 1 point prevents us. Oh, well, just ethically, morally, you know, in good conscience and faith, I can't work with this person because of X or Y or Z.
This reminds me, and forgive my digression, but this reminds me of Christians. Yesterday I did a program. And Steve Quayle and Pastor David Langford from the Voice of Evangelism were talking about the rapture. And the rapture is not a salvation issue. In other words, it's not a deal breaker if you're pre-trib, post-trib. And again, forgive my digression here. But it's interesting to see the reaction among Christians. They're being purposely divisive and digging in on this issue. And despite the fact that it's just, look, it doesn't matter. I mean, in the larger sense, it doesn't matter. As long as you agree on the salvation issue, the belief in a savior, okay, as a Christian. So that's what matters. So you mean to tell me you can't sit in the same room with someone who has differing beliefs on a non-salvation issue, because you don't like that person's stand on this particular topic? Same with the conservative Christian conservatives. You nailed it. And I didn't mean to, I guess, take us on a tangent, but you nailed it.
No, that's fine.
I just, you're right. I'm not going to work with you because, well, I can't agree with you on this one point. Yet we're okay with 9 of the 10, but this one, no. And it's kind of a trivial, in a sense, it would be trivial relative to the other 9. So.
Well, there was, and I'll give you a perfect example. When I was running in the state of New Hampshire for the state party, for the Republican state party chair, the question that I got more often than any other question was whether or not I would support an amendment to the charter for the state Republican Party recognizing domestic partnerships and gay marriage.
Okay.
Perfect example. And that is one of those issues because it touches on the political side of it, but it also touches on the religious side of it.
Okay.
Now, you know, I mean, full disclaimer. I am heterosexual. Okay.
I can vouch for that too.
I am a straight guy.
Yep.
But I don't care whether or not a man loves a man or a woman loves a woman. If you're able to find love and happiness in this world, more power to you. Who the hell am I to tell you that, you know, you can't have that? Here's what I would ask. Number one, keep what you do in the bedroom. Number two, don't politicize it. And number three, don't force it down my throat or the throats of children.
Amen. Thank you.
If you want to live your life, I am not going to condemn you for being homosexual. I'm not going to speak out against you for being homosexual. I am not a prosecutor or a sheriff or a judge for the kingdom of heaven. I am a Christian. The Bible has certain things that it says about homosexuality and a man lying with a man or a woman lying with a woman. Okay. That's between you and your God. It is not upon me to impose conviction or sentence upon you for violation of what happens to be in the Bible. Okay. Now, if more people took that approach, I think you'd find a lot more people working together because I know a lot of very good homosexual conservatives and homosexual Republicans. And I know a lot of those people who will not be given the time of day by these morally righteous Republicans who, oh, well, this person happens to live a lifestyle that I don't approve of, so therefore I am not going to work with this person. I'm not going to communicate with this person. I am not in any way, shape, or form going to permit this person to advance a cause that happens to be dear to me because of this one thing that we happen to differ on. And that is one of the most venomous and destructive philosophies that permeates the Republican Party today.
I agree. Now, we could talk all day on this. I agree with you on this. Where the problem comes in with the homosexuality, look, I don't agree with the lifestyle. I condemn that lifestyle. I believe it's not of God, and I think it's really a perversion of everything that God made us to be. What happens, however, on that one issue, and this is where I think we become, and I know this isn't even the topic, but this is where we run into problems, is that becomes a cause by itself, and it becomes a militant mm-hmm. cause, and then all of a sudden you're not asking for equal rights, you're asking for special rights. You're starting to pervert the not just the Bible but the Constitution in order to, the federal and as well as the state's Constitution in order to give you special rights. And I don't think that has nothing to do with any. You should not be afforded special rights because of your sexuality. That's end of story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that's just me, but is that right? I mean, you think that?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that.
Okay, so
I mean, I would no more ask for special concessions because, you know, I choose to sleep with a woman that I'm biologically attracted to a female. Okay, so I'm not asking for a parade. I'm not asking for special concessions. I am who I am.
Right.
Let me live my life the way that I choose to live my life, and I will deal with the consequences, good or bad, that happen to arise from the choices that I make in my life. Period, end of story. And exact same thing with somebody. Listen, you want to marry a guy, you want to sleep with a guy, you want to do that, that's fine. Okay, whatever consequences happen to come as a result of that behavior, either here or in the afterlife, that's on you and your God. It's not for me to impose my will over your life, just as I don't want you. And this is where my libertarian side really starts to come out. You know, live and let live. I'm going to let you live your life. I'm not going to condemn you. I'm not going to, you know, in my head, I don't approve of it.
You're kind of a Ron Paul kind of guy in terms of your political beliefs, right? In a sense.
I guess in a sense you could say that.
I don't mean that as pejorative, obviously.
No. I have those libertarian streaks, but when you look at the libertarian movement, or when you look at a lot of these libertarian streaks, I mean, ultimately it boils down to just the freedom of the individual. Let me live my life. Let me do what it is that I need to do. Now, that, and we've said before, that liberty is the responsible exercise of freedom.
Right.
Let me live my life. I will live my life responsibly. And as a result of you permitting me to live my life responsibly, I will bless other people with the fruits of my abundance, and I will not, if I find myself in a situation, I will not go asking for a handout. I will use my own intelligence and my own hard work and perseverance and ingenuity to work myself out of a problem.
There you go.
That's the trade-off. Leave me alone and let me do what I do. But if I happen to do that as a result of the choices that I make, the decisions that I happen to make, the consequences that befall me, I'm not about to turn around and ask somebody to help me out for something that I did myself.
Right. I agree with you on that.
You know.
So
okay. I think, you know, and we're kind of getting off.
I took you off.
The thing is that I think that's a perfect example, though, of how groups of people who, and let's say, for instance, these, you know, in New Hampshire, we have of course, every state has the log cabin Republicans. I know a lot of and I met a lot of these people when I was running for chair, met a lot of these people who are good, strong constitutional conservatives who believe in individual freedom, who believe in individual liberty, who would be the first people out there on the front of the line championing the cause of freedom and limited government and personal responsibility and all of those wonderful virtues that go with being a constitutional conservative. But yet there are people who refuse to work with them because of the simple fact, despite everything that they believe in, despite everything that they do, they will not work with that individual because of who that person happens to go to bed with at night. And I just think that that's incredibly destructive. And again, you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Okay. Again, you may not necessarily like it, may not necessarily agree with the lifestyle. That's great. But you have to understand too that you can't selectively pick when we talk about freedom and liberty. You can't selectively pick what you want and what you don't want. That makes you a hypocrite. It's the exact same thing when we as conservatives turn around and say, well, you know, the government should step in and intervene with Facebook and Twitter. No, I think Facebook and Twitter, and we've had this conversation before. I believe that Facebook and Twitter should be permitted to do whatever the hell it is that they want to do. Let them do it. And you know what? That doesn't work well for me as a conservative. But you know what? I have to maintain that line because if I draw an exception because it doesn't happen to work out for me particularly, that would make me a hypocrite.
Well, I think you exactly. And I think we have to go back to, at least in my view, if we are to be non-hypocrites, not hypocrites, we have to look at, for example, we talk about religious and moral absolutes. We look at the Bible as our standard. We talk about political or not political, but, you know, freedoms and what constitutes America. We look at the Constitution. What does the Constitution say about things like this? Well, is this a government? You know, this is not a government. It's not a First Amendment issue because it's not really a government venue. Am I correct in saying that?
Right. Well, it's not. I mean, people say, well, it's censorship. Well, no, it's not the government going in and saying, you know, you can say this or you cannot say that. It's an individual who, you know, and you know, Jack Dorsey with Twitter or Mark Zuckerberg with Facebook. This is an individual who is making a decision about content that happens to be housed on their proprietary servers or on their proprietary platform or the tech that they developed proprietarily. It's their choice. And you know what? There's absolutely nothing stopping people from going out and starting another social media company. I mean, you've got Parler. I don't know if you're familiar with Parler or not, but Parler is a Twitter alternative. And there's a lot of people that are using Parler.
Yes.
And you know, Parler needs to. I mean, it would be nice to see Parler get a round of funding and actually start to make a dent out there. But there are alternatives to Twitter. There are alternatives to Facebook. But I think a lot of times people look at it and go, and I'll give you a perfect example: Google. Okay.
Yes.
Google is absolutely positively, I believe, one of the most evil and satanic influences in our world today.
Agreed.
Google exists for the purposes of aggregating data for money and control purposes over every single person in this country.
So does Facebook in a very similar realm. Go ahead.
But how many times do we choose to use the Waze navigation app? Why? Well, because it's there and we use it. Okay. And so is Google tracking our information because they know where we're going and where we park our cars and all this stuff? Absolutely they do. But what do we choose to use it because it's convenient, because it's there, because it's the path of least resistance for us getting or obtaining or doing that which we need to do or that which we need to get. So it's a choice. I mean, people use Facebook. Why? Well, because most people are on Facebook. And you'll generally hear, but well, I have to be on Facebook because that's where everybody is. Okay. So then basically you're creating a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because if you're saying you have to be on Facebook because everybody else is on Facebook, well, then you're one of the everybody else that the other person who says the exact same thing is referring to. Break the cycle. Stop using it. I have not been on Facebook or Twitter since October 4th. You'll notice that's the last tweet that I was on.
Yeah, I see that.
And the reason being is because when I brought Robert Spencer to New Hampshire, all hell broke loose.
You know, yeah, I don't know if you want to share any of that, but folks, I got to tell you something. Keith has been under fire. I mean, tremendously. He's been a virtual human sacrifice, and I'm using that, of course, in the metaphorical sense. But
No. That was the actual terminology from one of the Republican leaders in the state of New Hampshire, that I was a human sacrifice.
From a Republican leader. Oh, isn't that special?
Now, okay. I do have to say, and there's the, you know, Ed, so my very first day on WNTK was September 30th of 2015, which fell on a Monday. Okay. My last day at WNTK was October 4th of this year, which happened to fall on a Friday. It was 4 years to the day that my contract expired.
And look at that, just folks on the screen, if you're watching this, look, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but on the screen, look at the date of that tweet, Robert Spencer, Keith Hansen, October 4th. Go ahead, sir.
Now, there are a lot of people who look at it and say, oh, his departure from the radio station was blowback because of this thing. It had nothing to do with that. I left the radio station because of contract issues, nothing to do with the whole Robert Spencer thing. But of course, people confabulate. People look at it and go, oh, well, you know, geez, the Robert Spencer thing was on Friday, October 4th, and Friday, October 4th was his last day on radio, so he got fired because – I wasn't fired from the radio station. There was a contract issue. Every year, my contract got renewed. I chose not to renew that contract for a number of reasons. It was mutually held between station ownership, station management, and myself that there was a certain degree of irreconcilable differences based upon what I was looking to do, how I was looking to brand my media, and where I was looking to go, and what the radio station was looking to do.
So what was the hell that broke loose? I mean, what was the hell that broke loose at that time? What was the hell that broke loose?
Well, the hell that broke loose was the response that came in from the community, and then the fact that I had a committee in Sullivan County that would not stand behind me and would not back me up, that was insisting that I cancel this event with Robert Spencer because the rabid, outspoken leftist progressives in this area were demanding that he not appear and he not have the opportunity to exercise his First Amendment constitutional right to speak. And what made it even worse was that the chair of the Democrat Party, Ray Buckley, that sludge pump, couldn't even make the differentiation between Robert Spencer
and Richard Spencer.
Richard Spencer, the white supremacist.
Wow. Okay. Jeez. So what happened? I mean, I don't know how deep you want to get into this, but what happened? I mean, did Robert Spencer end up speaking?
He absolutely did.
Good.
Because I refused, because I would not back down.
All right.
I would not back down. And so we had an event with less than 50 people. But after the second venue canceled on us, looking for a third venue, I said, okay, we've got a certain number of people that have already purchased tickets. They are going to get a very special evening with him because I'm not going to sell any more tickets. I secured a venue. And I reached out individually to the people who had already purchased tickets, and I said, this is the address, this is the location, it's super secret squirrel stuff, don't tell anybody. I had the vice chair of my committee call me and say, hey, where are we going to do the event? I said, did you buy a ticket? He said, no, I can't make it today. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't disclose the location.
I love it.
And we had the event, and the people who showed up there, is about 30 people, but the 30 people who showed up there, they got a very intimate evening with Robert Spencer. They got to speak to him one-on-one. They got pictures with him. They got autographed books with him. And, you know, and the funny thing is that the fundraiser made a decent amount of money. It did not make what it could have if people actually stood behind it. It was a fundraiser for the Sullivan County Republican Committee. But the point being was that it didn't raise what it could have, but it absolutely put money into the account. And actually that event put more money into the account than had been put into the account over the previous 3 years.
So it goes right back to at the beginning, what you're saying. You know, it's not just, you're not just fighting. We are just not fighting the enemy within, meaning the communist, socialist, Democrat, whatever left. You're fighting within your own organization, within your own group, the Republican right conservative group as well, right?
Let's make the differentiation, because the committee is made up largely of elected officials. A significant number of the people who are in that committee are state senators and state representatives. And so a big driving force, a huge motivating factor in their decision to offer up a human sacrifice and to capitulate to the whims of the Democrats was out of fear that somehow, some way, this was going to come back to haunt them during their respective campaigns. So wow. They wanted to be the ones to be able to say, oh, nope, see, we didn't support this, or I didn't support this. I was one of the people who wanted to see this whole thing stopped. So that way there, see, I'm really one of the good guys. You don't have to go to war with me. See, because I'm one of the few people up here who doesn't give a rat's ass about going toe-to-toe, face-to-face with any of these people. I don't back down. I don't apologize. And God forbid you come at me swinging, because you're probably going to get laid out. And I don't mean that in a physical sense. I just mean I don't back down from these people.
Nor should we.
I am right, you are wrong, period, yeah. End of story. Shut the hell up and stay out of my face, because we're going to have a problem.
Man. Wow. So here we are.
But they're too interested in being liked, and they're too interested in the perception that they are nice.
Yeah, exactly. And here we are today. You know, it's 5 days into December? And here we are, and we're it almost seems like we're fighting the same battle over and over again, or the same elements of the battle over and over again, Keith. It really does. I mean, I don't know. So what are we going to do about all of this? Is there a simple answer to all of this, whether it's impeachment or fights like you just described on your home turf, within your home turf? I mean, is there a single simple answer to all this, or are we going down?
I don't know. I recall the conversation that you and I have had on a number of occasions where we've likened it to the alcoholic, the person that has to hit that rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what you have until it's gone. And so I think for a lot of it, our freedom, our liberty, our sovereignty is taken for granted.
Hey, you know what? I wasn't even looking at the pro. I was so enjoying our conversation that we're at the top of the hour break. Can you come back again really soon? Can I touch
absolutely.
Your arm? Okay.
You, absolutely.
I'll call you after we get done with the program. I want to talk to you, because maybe we'll have you on real soon. So
sounds good to me.
All right, brother. Thanks.
God bless.
Folks,
thank you.
Hagman Report right here on the Global Star Radio Network, and right back to you right where you're at. Welcome to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. I'm going to keep hounding you until you do it, until you buy coffee. HagmanStore.com, HagmanStore.com, three different roasts. We got the Patriot Blend, which you got to read the like the sides and stuff, because a lot of important messages. American Patriot Strong and America First. Okay, so you've got the Patriot Blend, the Revolution Blend, and the Detective's Choice. Detective's Choice is a little bit bigger kick of caffeine, comes in whole bean, ground, and K-cups. They all three do. And that's America. It is America, but that's HagmanStore.com. HagmanStore.com. Proceeds keep this operation afloat, as well as significant proceeds are sent to organizations such as Russ Dizdar, such as Vets for Child Rescue, the real fighters, the front lines fighting human trafficking. And that's HagmanStore.com. Look right there on your screen. There it is, HagmanStore.com. By the way, it's a good Christmas gift. And I spoke to the detective again today, this morning, or this afternoon, I guess it was. He said, you know, we need more coffee. This is kind of like the last time I'm going to call you before, you know, we put you in cuffs. We need more coffee. So it's coming, brother. It's coming. All right. First hour, I was talking about that yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday. Am I getting my days mixed up here? The four law professors, three called by the left, and, of course, one, and that's Jonathan Turley, by the Republicans. But one of the most visible displays of righteous indignation took place between Representative Matt Gaetz and that mophead liberal law professor, the bespeckled Muppet Pamela Carlin. Did you hear what she said about Barron Trump? It's okay to name your son Barron. It's not just, you know, you can't be one. How dare you? How dare you, as Lionel would say. I can't do impressions, but evoking the Greta personage. But I don't know how many people saw this. And isn't it something, and this is just me speaking from the heart, my observations. You know, before we wasn't the left talking about decorum, civility, and what was that word? Oh, my goodness. Let me think of that word. It wasn't decorum. It wasn't civility. What was that word? It wasn't statesmanlike. Well, you know what I'm talking about. I don't think I have to. But see, we've lost all of that. And folks, right now America, and I will say this, America is in the fight of her life. And as I read the Winston Churchill statement the first hour, I'm going to read this again, because this statement was featured by my guest in the series Siege. Hang on a second. SiegeTheMovie.com. Here's the statement by Winston Churchill. If you will not fight for the right when you can easily win without bloodshed, if you will not fight when your victory will be sure and not too costly, you may come to the moment when you will have to fight with all the odds against you and only a small chance of survival. There may be a worst case scenario. There may even be a worst case scenario. You may have to fight when there is no hope of victory, because it is better to perish than to live as slaves. My question, are we at that point? Brandon House says right now we have some hope of victory, or at least slowing down the defeat of America, but only if we can awaken more Americans to the truth of what is presented in this movie. I'm telling you right now, Brennan sent me the docu-movie. If I'm not firing on all cylinders more than usual today, I'm going to tell you why. I watched all but 15 minutes of the entire docu-movie. 8 hours and 8.5 hours. I don't know. I'm on information overload, but I can tell you this, the information in this docu movie, some I've heard before, some I've never heard. Folks, we are under siege. All of our freedoms, including and especially our religious freedoms, are under siege. We must do our best to slow down the confiscation of our God-given rights and work to avert the persecution of Christians and Jews. And if we don't lift up, if we do not lift up a shout of warning, I'm afraid that persecution and tyranny is going to roll right over the top of us. And we must live out a biblical worldview and use truth and facts to destroy the arguments that are being offered up as justification for a national surrender to communism. And it's being masked by certain terms like, oh, social justice, like common good, globalism, Agenda 2030, shared community. You know the terms. With me now to present what went into this. And let me tell you something. I've watched my share of DVDs this year. It's December 5th, okay? I don't know. I was probably sent easily 15 DVDs. Or 15 movies, if you will, documentaries and such. This by far was the best and the most comprehensive. Brandon, how you doing?
Hey, thank you. You're the first person to see the whole docu-movie all the way through. You know that?
I believe that because I got to tell you this, okay? I took over the TV in the den because that's where we have the player thing. And my wife came in. It was like she came in once and she said, "You all right?" And I said, "Yeah." She came in. It was like 3 a.m. and you know, my eyes were being held up. And she said, "What are you watching?" I said, "Sit down. You need to see this." 3 hours later, she was still sitting there. And that's not like her. So thank you. It was a perfect. Well, it's perfect. You.
It is 8 hours and 22 minutes, and I learned a lot putting it together. I think our audience will learn a lot. I mean, you and I do this full time for our jobs, our occupations, and so I think we learn a lot every day. But our audience is going to be floored. It is 8 hours and 22 minutes. I think you can testify to the fact that it is a fast 8 hours and 22 minutes. It is. Anything that was in there that was slow got removed. I mean, again, just like Sabotage, the goal was to make this like watching a Tom Clancy movie, except for this is real life. I have former FBI, former CIA, former DHS. I interview a former KGB agent. I interview Rich. We have Rich Higgins in there, who's the former National Security Council staffer for President Donald Trump. I mean, this thing is loaded up with experts. The subtitle, of course, is The Clear and Present Dangers Pushing America to the Brink of a Civil War, World War III, and a Marxist Islamic Revolution and Globalism. And we make the case for all of them. We already are in a civil war. Daniel Greenfield, we play a clip from him. He says people associate a civil war with shooting each other. That's how a civil war ends. We have a former FBI agent that sat at this news desk, and we interviewed him, a former FBI agent that started his career in 1969. He says we're already involved in a civil war. Diana West says there is a civil war going on, and it's going on within our government. And,
I was so glad you brought her in, by the way. I was so glad. And folks, the production, I don't know, maybe this doesn't matter to a lot of people, but to me, the production of this was top-notch. I mean, and you said it was a fast eight hours, 20. You betcha it was fast. I mean, I can attest to that. It was. But wow. And one other thing, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I got to tell you, I got to give you props for this too. The way you handled the segment with Jim McCarthy and infusing, my goodness, M. Stanton Evans. Thank you. M. Stanton Evans into that mix. It was just great. The Venona Project. People need to know that because it's just, incredible. So thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt, but
no,
continue.
That's fine. Well, let me just mention the Venona Project. A lot of Americans are not familiar with the Venona Project, but it's something that started in about 1940 and ran up until about 1980, 84, 85, somewhere in there. And, these were communications being intercepted by our intelligence agency, the forerunner to the National Security Agency. It was called the Venona Project. Senator Joseph McCarthy would not have known about this. And yet it proves everything he said was true and way beyond what he was saying. And they were declassified, and then they began to release them in 1995, the transmissions from the Soviet Union to their spies in our government. And they found them at all levels of our government. So Joseph McCarthy's name has become a pejorative. Joseph McCarthy had applied to him and done to him what is now being done to any of us that hold to a constitutional, biblical, Judeo-Christian worldview. They have weaponized psychology. That's one of the themes in this documentary. They have weaponized psychology. They've weaponized words like conspiracy. They've weaponized, and yet these people are involved in a conspiracy. I mean, we're seeing it right now with the deep state. There was a conspiracy to carry out a literal coup. And we have the former, again, staffer for the National Security Council, Rich Higgins, on there saying that that's what this was. And yet they weaponize words like conspiracy, even though that's what these people are involved in. They've weaponized words like racism. They've weaponized all kinds of words. But what they're doing is weaponizing those words to set us up as crazy, same way they did to Joseph McCarthy. And not only are we being set up to be crazy, then they will deprive you of your civil rights and liberties because you're crazy. You're dangerous. You're a threat to society. Now, this has been going on for a long time, and I deal with the history of it, something that most Americans have probably never heard of called the Tavistock Institute. We know about the Frankfurt School. I deal with the Frankfurt School. They came to America in 1933. They were dropped down at Brandeis and Berkeley and Princeton. They were from Germany. They were Marxist, open Marxist. They brought us what is called political correctness or cultural Marxism, saying that they were going to attack the existing morality of the culture and then collapse America's value system. And once they collapsed our value system, what people would want is socialism. And then they could roll from cultural Marxism to the economic philosophy of Karl Marx, social justice. But a lot of people don't know about another organization. They may know about the Frankfurt School because we've been talking about that since 1997 and cultural Marxism. And what's really also ironic is, and we've been talking about these things since the 90s, and now all of a sudden all these wannabes and bloggers and guys that have a podcast want to talk about these issues, yet some of these people are the same ones calling us names and conspiracy theorists. So be very careful of the fools that just plagiarize everything that some of us have been writing and saying for years. And there are a lot of fools out there.
Yep.
And most of the fools are in the religious community. The religious community is loaded up with more fools. You can't swing a dead cat without hitting a religious fool. And as I reveal in Siege, one of the greatest and I will be revealing in another documentary coming out in the spring, one of the greatest threats facing us is a false dominant church. And one of the greatest threats to America right now are evangelical Christians.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Yes.
One of the greatest threats to America right now are evangelical Christians. Now, I'm just going to let that sit there for a minute because that might shock people, because people would say, well, House, aren't you an evangelical Christian? Well, that word evangelical doesn't mean anything anymore. In fact, the word Christian doesn't even mean anything. Many of our Jewish friends, you say the word Christian, they'd step back 2 paces. Why? Because there was the German Christians that threw in with Adolf Hitler. They used the cross. And I have pictures in one of my documentaries that will come out next year of the swastika and the cross together. These were the German Christians. These were the people that today we would refer to maybe as evangelicals. They were Reformed, they were Calvinist, they were Lutheran, and they were following the rantings and writings of people like John Calvin and Luther, who are spewing anti-Semitism. So many of my Jewish friends, they hear the word Christian or see a cross, they step back a couple paces, and rightfully so, because they understand how that has been distorted. And the word evangelical has been distorted. And now we are under siege from a neo-evangelicalism. And as I will reveal in my upcoming documentary on brainwashing, we now have groups running around claiming to be evangelicals that are nothing more than communist front groups. In fact, I deal with one of the groups in this movie, the Gospel Coalition.
Yep.
This is nothing, I believe, but a Marxist front group. We've already proven they're getting funding from globalist organizations, and they've penetrated the evangelical churches in America. And now you have the National Association of Evangelicals running in lockstep with George Soros and working with the Evangelical Immigration Roundtable to bring all these illegal immigrants in here and drop them down in key counties to try to steal the election by bringing in illegals. Look, as I reveal in the docu-movie Siege, Florida almost elected an open Marxist as governor.
Yes.
He lost by 32,000 votes. 32,000 votes.
Yep.
And they almost took Georgia. And right now there's a concerted effort with something called the AND campaign that we broke on our radio show. The AND campaign, it's biblical values and social justice is what they call themselves. And so they call themselves the AND campaign. And it's nothing more than Black Lives Matter repackaged for the evangelical church. You know who's running it? Two former Obama operatives. I would actually say current and still Obama operatives. Two guys that work closely with Barack Obama, and they're peddling this to the evangelical church, whether it's the Gospel Coalition, the Southern Baptist Convention, the largest Protestant denomination in America, and Russell Moore, who helped to found the Evangelical Immigration Roundtable, working with George Soros, whether it's the AND campaign. Now we have uncovered and broken our show something called Neighborly Faith, which is going on to major evangelical colleges and universities, as I deal with in the movie Siege.
Yep.
Major evangelical colleges and universities doing what's called Neighborly Faith to do interfaith dialogue with known Marxists and known members of Muslim Brotherhood. That's the group that worked with Adolf Hitler to carry out the Holocaust. Muslim Brotherhood, CARE, Hamas, same thing.
Right.
This is on evangelical. I mean, I could just talk all day long about how the evangelicals are destroying America. I don't mean the conservative, constitutionalist, Tea Party Christians that are real Christians. But the greatest threat to America now, really the last line of defense, are the evangelical Christian churches that are being taken down. In January of this year, I had a retired CIA operations officer on my right and one on my left in my home having dinner. I was talking about this kind of thing to them and my frustration with, quote, evangelicals. And I even said maybe I should go back into secular talk radio because I'm so frustrated because I see more understanding in many regards coming from people that don't even call themselves evangelicals than I do so-called evangelicals. I mean, they've used their spirituality to justify not thinking anymore, many of them. And it's all now based on spirituality and feelings and mysticism and all this other trash. And they said, we understand your frustration, but don't quit reaching out to the evangelical Christians in America because this is the last line of defense. Now, neither one of these former CIA operations officers would call themselves an evangelical. Neither one would call themselves an evangelical. But they said the evangelicals are the last line of defense, and we know for a fact the Marxists and the Islamists are boasting that's the last line they have to penetrate, and then they've penetrated all the power centers in America. So my frustration is, folks, if the evangelical churches collapse in America with this political correctness and buying into this psychological weaponizing of words and all this other trash that I reveal in Siege, we're in big trouble, and we've seen that before, and it was done in Germany. It was called the German Christians, and they dissolved their denominations and united under the Reich Bishop, handpicked by Adolf Hitler. And many of them now are using twisted scripture to tell you how you're not a good Christian if you're not for these immigrants coming into here unvetted and dropping them down in your communities. And again, this is all being done systematically so they can take over the South.
Take over the South, I don't mean to interrupt because every word that you have said is so important for people to understand. And folks, I really want you to think about what Brandon just said, but also in this docu-movie, please get this. Okay. I'm telling you, please get this because what you're hearing Brandon House talk about here is just, I don't know, the thin film, that thin veneer of the evidence he provides in this. Brandon, I got to tell you, there was so much about the evangelical community that I didn't know that you exposed. I'm thinking, no, this can't be. You know, I've heard it. I thought I knew most of what you were talking about, but you dug so deep into this, it blew my mind. And even my wife, who does not, admittedly, does not follow things this deep in this area, she said, "That can't. Is this right? Is this? I mean, she was blown away by this and." I think our audience would be too.
Well, I hope they will be. I'll tell you something. Here's what Karl Marx said, and I quote this in the film. Karl Marx said, "The party cannot make the revolution alone. The concept of the united front is absolutely essential." And what he was saying is we have to go after more than just people who are communists. In this docu-movie, I reveal that there was a man, and I show pictures of him. There was a man that was thrown into a Romanian communist prison for 14 years in Romania. His name was Richard Wurmbrand. And he testified in the 60s after he was released. His freedom was purchased. And he testified in the 60s to a congressional committee. It was the most sold government document for the next 3 years. And he warned in the mid-1960s that the communists were very excited about the fact that you have something like 300,000 liberal clergy in America. Well, of course, today that's millions now. And many of them are in the, quote, evangelical churches. Social justice, dominion theology, liberation theology, all these things they're pushing. Liberation theology is really socialism mixed with so-called Christianity. And he said, but in the mid-60s, he said, the communists around the world are very excited that you have 300,000 liberal clergy. And they know that they cannot win your people for communism, and they don't need to win your congregations and these congregations and churches for communism. They only need to win them for a left-wing Christianity that supports communism. And that's exactly what's happened. We didn't listen to his warning, and that's exactly what's happened. And today it's called social justice, common good, human flourishing, scripture taken out of context. I was poor, I was hungry, I was thirsty, I was naked, you came to see me. That's Matthew 25, that's Jesus dividing the sheep from the goats, has nothing to do with immigration policy. It has to do, frankly, if you want to teach it in context, it has to do with those people that ministered to the Jews during the tribulation period. It has nothing to do with what's going on right now. But that's the verses that are used all the time. Or Leviticus 19, be kind to the stranger in a foreign land. Has nothing to do with immigration policy. It's telling the Jews, don't lord your being a Jew over the non-Jew or take advantage of them. So these guys have created a false Christianity, a liberal Christianity that now supports communism. In fact, in my upcoming documentary on brainwashing, I will show the screenshots where a so-called evangelical group over in Australia now has a prayer guide calling on the churches to pray for the accomplishment of the global goals of sustainable development. Agenda 2030. So what you have is so-called Christians now praying for the accomplishment of world government. And as I reveal in this docu-movie with Mark Musser, who wrote the book Nazi Ecology, sustainable development, Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, is nothing more than what Adolf Hitler was doing in Nazi Germany. It was the belief that nature was over man. Nature was over man. Man was to serve nature, not nature serving man. And then it was racism that said that the Jews were the poison, the Jews were the blight, and we must eradicate them in order to continue Darwinian evolution and spiritual evolution by getting rid of the blight. And why were they blight? Because they had a Jewish worldview that understood Genesis, that God gave man stewardship, and man was over creation, not creation over man. So they had the wrong ecology. And then they were capitalists, many of them. So what were they going after? People that didn't have a view of Mother Earth worship, sustainable development. Hitler was into all of this, renewable energy. He was passing animal rights bills in 1933, as I revealed in this docu-movie. You could shove how many Jews can you get on a cattle car? One more. But yet the same trains that were carrying animals, guys were getting in trouble for putting too many animals in a car because they had, in 1933, one of the animal rights laws passed by Adolf Hitler's people and put into law were how you treated the animals. And that was largely going after the Jews and their kosher diet. So what do we see today? The war on meat, the war on farmers, yep. You know, taking people's property, more green space. That's what Hitler was doing. He was cleaning out the Jews from Germany, making green space, open fields. This is, again, all of this is being repeated. I'm giving you the bird's eye view, the clip note version. It's very detailed in the film Siege. But the point is, again, that Karl Marx said you can't have a revolution without a coalition. And then if you go to Gus Hall, who ran for president under the Communist Party in the 1970s and in the 1980s, also said the same thing. We need a coalition. And it will have to also include non-communist. And Lenin said this as well. So what they've done is they've gone and they've grabbed the church. And as I reveal in Siege, in Christianity Today in 1960, the FBI director, J. Edgar Hoover, warned that the communists were targeting the American pulpit. And the great come along, hey, we're about love. We're about the brotherhood of man. We're about justice. Let's just work together. This is the great come along.
That was something in Siege. I'm glad you really dug into, because I did. I was not aware of that with Hoover's warning. I'm telling you, there's so much. You presented so much in here that I was not aware of. I intend to watch it again and take notes, because it's that detailed, and you've got to see this. Thank you for doing this. And I don't know what else to say except thank you. Because people need to understand more than just that thin veneer that we're talking about, because people need to understand. Folks, you need to see this. Do me a favor. Okay. If you know what, you don't have to buy my coffee. Okay. Put the money toward the Siege. Because if you only have a limited amount, believe me, it's well worth it. If you exchange Christmas gifts, if that's what you do, give this to someone you really care about. And this, look, I'm not being paid to say this. I don't get any money out of it. Brandon, do I get any money out of this?
No, you do. Thank you for
being great. I'm just telling you, you know what, folks? What we're seeing, and there were so many things in here that caused me to say, wait a minute. We're seeing this today, and you're talking about it in the case you're talking about the cattle car, you know, and the people versus animals. I'm thinking, wait a minute, we're seeing this today.
Yep.
And I'm well read. Believe me, I'm well read. But I'll tell you something. I learned so much new in this, over and above everything. So thank you. But so, before we get too far on, where can people get this?
SiegeTheMovie.com. Yeah, if your guy wants to put up, instead of Worldview Weekend, if he wants to put up SiegeTheMovie.com on his name, that's where they can go. And they can actually go there and watch six different clips, a 25-minute trailer, and then five clips. There are five segments for the 8 hours and 22 minutes. There are five segments. And so they can watch 67 minutes for free at SiegeTheMovie.com. And one of the things I did in this for this movie, because it is 8 hours and 22 minutes, and it was only supposed to be 6 hours, but I had not finished covering it, so I said, hey, I'm just going to keep going. But it's a fast 8 hours and 22 minutes, as you've stated.
Yeah.
But what I've done, if you notice, is I put a menu for each section. So as we have different sections, like America's under siege from the weaponizing of psychology, America's under siege from pragmatic pastors, America's under siege from an attack on our critical infrastructure, America's under siege from a misunderstanding of the fake collapse of communism. I mean, whatever this section might be, it's all broken down in a menu, so you can watch whatever segment you want. So if you watch the whole 8 hours and 22 minutes and you say, hey, I really just want to show my family this 10 minutes or this 15 minutes, now how am I going to find it in the 8 hours and 22 minutes? Well, there's a menu, and you can go through that menu and just click it and take you right to that segment. So I don't know if you noticed that or not, that would show that families and churches, Sunday school classes, whatever, neighbors can find the information quickly and show it to their family and friends. So SiegeTheMovie.com. You know, let me give you another comment about this group, the Tavistock Institute, that I had not really studied until I was preparing for this docu-movie. This is a group of people from America and Great Britain that systematically studied people who'd been to war. And what the Tavistock Institute found, and they actually worked with a lot of the guys at the Frankfurt School as well, but what they found is that men who had been involved in war and had been put through some kind of trauma were easily brainwashed. That if you could shake them and traumatize them, then you could suggest things to them that would be more easily implanted. So they become very susceptible after being traumatized. And what they determined was they could actually set up scenarios within society where they bombard people constantly with chaos. Well, we know that one of the goals of the communists, according to a former KGB agent that's presented in Siege, he said the four stages for communist revolution in a nation is demoralize, destabilize, chaos, and then the new norm being big government socialism. So they also learned at the Tavistock Institute to carry out a psychological warfare on people where you're constantly bombarding them with chaos, violence, contradictory messages, truth mixed with error. So it threw people off. They didn't know their equilibrium was thrown off in the area of reason and logic. And so you have this constant campaign coming at people using media and education and movies and culture to attack the existing morality of the culture, and constant trauma and chaos till finally people throw up their hands. And they just like, this is overwhelming. And how many people do you know like that today, Doug, who just simply say, it's too overwhelming, I don't want to hear about it, it's too negative, or you're talking to them and you might as well be talking to a brick wall. They can't even process the words you're using. They don't understand what you're saying. They can't think logically and with reason and context anymore. This isn't by mistake. As I explained in the movie Siege, this is all a systematic psychological program that began in the 1930s and 40s, and they openly stated that they would do this, and that anyone, by the way, that disagreed with world government should be determined mentally ill. And so what I'm warning about in Siege, in one part, is the weaponizing of psychology, is they're setting up conservatives and those who embrace a constitutional Judeo-Christian worldview ethic as being mentally unstable. And then they're going to use it to start depriving you of your civil rights, your civil liberties, your Second Amendment right, that kind of thing. Another thing that's very important for people to understand, as I reveal in Siege, they're trying to disconnect. I hope your audience is listening to what I'm about to say. They're trying to disconnect American values from America. Were American values we all agreed with, regardless of your race, your color, your creed, your political party. There were American values we all agreed with. When the national anthem would play, we would stand up in a ball field and put our hand over our heart, and we all agreed that we would honor the flag because it stood for the service and sacrifice of people who gave us those rights and liberties. It stood finally for 50 stars as those stars continue to be added as union territories were added to the Union. So it stands for our E Pluribus Unum, of the many one, and we're united in one under certain inalienable God-given rights that we believe in. And what is the purpose and function of government? To secure and protect those rights and liberties, that those rights are given to us by God, not by government. We understood that there are 50 states, and those 50 states were also constitutional republics based on the law of the divine, not any set religion or denomination over another, but that we're a constitutional republic that says that whatever the divine's ruled on, we don't rule against, and we honor the people that have served and sacrificed for those freedoms. And we would all stand up, put our hand over our heart, and it didn't matter. And you grew up in a time, and I grew up in a time, when we would go to football games and baseball games, and everybody did this. And there was respect for common American values, right?
Absolutely.
Not anymore. Now, this is by design. I explained in Siege how we got here. But what they're trying to do is disconnect those American values from America, no longer make those American values that are common for all of us, regardless of our political affiliation or religion, but say those American values that underpin our Constitution are racist. They're racist values.
Yep.
They are social constructs.
Yep.
Created by white men to oppress people, enslave people. So what they're trying to do is disconnect American values from America and then say, no, those aren't American values. Those are the values of racists and bigots. And I explain all of this in this film.
And it explained it very well, too. And look what they've done. I know this is kind of an off, a little bit sideways here, but I mean, think about this with the statues, with our history, trying to revise America's history. But as you were talking there, the flashes of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez went through my mind and some of the other members of the, squalid, squad, shall we say. I mean, it's just, it hurts. It hurts when you look. And I think you said this very well. Whatever God has ruled on, you know, we don't rule against. But yet, here we are.
That was, by the way, a quote from William Blackstone, right. The leading scholar for the Founding Fathers. He said, that's just what a constitutional republic is. Whatever the divine has ruled on, we don't rule against. And what is happening is that people are being systematically and psychologically conditioned to embrace evil. In 1948, Julian Huxley was the first executive director of the United Nations Education Scientific Cultural Organization, tied to the UN, obviously. And in 1948, he wrote a paper, extensive paper. I write about it in my book, and I talk about it in my last docu-movie, Sabotage, and I write about it in my book, Marxianity, How Marxism and Christianity Are Merging. But what he said, among other things, not only do we have to merge Christianity and capitalism, he openly said that, Christianity and Marxism. He said we have to merge Christianity and Marxism. He also said in 1948, we have to begin to talk about the unthinkable so that it can become thinkable. We have to talk and prepare for the unthinkable so it can become thinkable. And what I've come to the conclusion is that in 1973, with the legalization of abortion, that really wasn't about abortion. What we have to learn is to think ahead of the liberals and say, what is it they really want? They never want what they say they want. Oh, well, we want abortion to be rare, but it is the right of the woman, and it's privacy, and it's her body, and she has the right to choose, but it should be rare, and so we need the right of abortion, Roe v. Wade, 1973. Rare, but the right. Okay, do they want it rare? No, they don't want it rare. Was it about the woman's right to choose? Absolutely not. It was about making money, number one, for Planned Parenthood, and Planned Parenthood founded by Margaret Sanger, an avowed racist. But it was more than about that. That was step one. It was about beginning with abortion, pushing it as being rare, to preserve the life of the mother and health issues. So again, they're lying. And then it was to move toward, in the 90s, partial birth abortion. Now, in 1973, if someone said, hey, this is going to lead to partial birth abortion, and you'd say, well, what is that? Well, that's where we'll turn the baby around in the womb, let it come out feet first, and then when a little bit of its head is still in the womb, we'll take scissors and slice its neck and then put it in a vacuum and suck its brains out. You'd say, whoa. You're crazy. This 1973, you're telling me by the 1990s that's what's going to come into America? If we do this, legalize abortion in 1973, you're nuts. Well, that's what happened in 1990. But they weren't done yet. They weren't done yet. The unthinkable still must continue so that it might become thinkable. What are we arguing about now, as I revealed in the docu-movie? We have now legalized in 19 states infanticide, and we show you in the movie the governor of Virginia saying, hey, the baby's going to be born, made comfortable, and then the mother and the doctors can decide whether to let it live or kill it. Now, again, if you had said in 1973, hey, the goal is to legalize abortion so we can then do partial birth abortion so we can then kill the baby outside the womb, you would have said you're crazy. We have not learned how to think like the Marxists have and to think ahead of them. Whatever they do, step one, that's just step one. We have not learned to think two, three, four steps ahead in what it is they want to do. So what is being laid out right now is the unthinkable to become thinkable. And killing a baby outside the womb with infanticide legalized in 19 states is not the final step either. Again, this is just the conditioning, as I deal with in the movie Siege. Where this is going is universal health care. Medicare for all, universal health care, socialized medicine. Obamacare was designed to fail. And as we reveal in the movie Siege, and we have tons and tons of experts in this, it's not me just spewing my opinion. I brought in tons of experts, former FBI, CIA, DHS, former KGB, former national security staffers from President Trump and others. But what Obamacare was designed to do was fail. And it was designed by a open communist, friends with Barack Obama, an open communist out of Chicago.
Yep.
And when it fails, the government will become the single payer. That's why it's called single payer. And then what you can do is start euthanizing. You can start eugenics. And that's what Aldous Huxley was talking about in 1948, eugenics. Well, what we're going to move to is killing people who are deemed unworthy productive human resource are too expensive for the state to continue to take care of. And socialized medicine will mean you will see people put onto hospice long before they should. And I'm already researching right now, Doug. Now, I'll be glad to share it with you when my research is done. But I am now uncovering, with the help of my audience, stories, documented stories of people whose parents they're trying to put on hospice and then jack them up with lots of morphine, slow down their heart, and let them die. And one of my friends had they attempted to do this to his mother when she was in her 80s, when she was in a car wreck, broke her neck, was in a car wreck. They tried to put her on morphine and euthanize her. He stood up to the doctor and wouldn't let it happen. She was 80 years old. Today, she's 100 years old, still balances her checkbook, just went to a Minnesota Twins game last year. They tried euthanizing her in her eight when she was in her early 80s. If he hadn't been there to stop it, it would have happened. I'm telling you, Doug, we already have people being euthanized on hospice, being jacked up with morphine, slowing down their heart and killing them. And most people, this is being done, and they don't even know that their parents have been euthanized because the experts are brought in. They're told we need to make them comfortable. It's their time to go. They trust the doctors and the hospice people. And I'm not saying all hospice people are bad and all doctors are bad, but doctors and nurses are some of the ones telling us these stories. And the family doesn't even know that their family is just members just been put on hospice and they've been lied to. But I'm finding a connection between those who have their own money and pay for their own care and then those who end up on government money. It seems like once they run out of money of their own, you know, any facility is happy to take their money. But once they run out of their money of their own and now they're onto the government, it seems like I'm finding stories where there is the chance now to bring in hospice and start getting rid of some of these people. Well, that's only going to increase under socialized medicine because they won't be able to afford it. So how are we going to move from 73 to 2020? The unthinkable becomes thinkable, and now we've conditioned the American people. You steal the civil rights of a child, then we're going to steal the civil rights of Judeo-Christians and constitutionalists and Tea Party people. And if you don't think this is what's happening, then you don't understand history, folks, because this is exactly how they dehumanized the Jews and got rid of them.
You're exactly right. Brandon, I know we only have about 50 more minutes together. I know you've got some time commitments, so I want to be very judicious with your time. The unthinkable becomes the thinkable in such a short period of time. And really, in the scheme of things, 73 to 2020, think about that, folks, as Brandon pointed out. That's really not that long. I mean, to me, I look around, tell Eric all the time, you know, I ask him all the time what happened to the 70s. But that's, and think about this. So, wow, I can't wait for your research on this because, by the way, I've got a personal situation, a friend of mine, a friend of my wife's in hospice. And, you're right, run out of money. All of a sudden, the patient plan changes a little bit. Yep. Now all of a sudden I'm seeing morphine go way up. Now you know, I'm all in favor of keeping a patient comfortable, but you don't kill them. So.
Yep. Well, and something else we deal with in this movie, I mean, we deal with so many things in this movie, Siege, and again, they can watch a bunch of it for free at siegethemovie.com. I hope they'll order it for Christmas and give the gifts to friends. It's not a religious video in that I'm not pushing, you know, a bunch of theology and doctrine onto people. I mean, we're defending the Judeo-Christian worldview ethic, which is the underpinning of our constitutional republic. But what I'm saying is you can give this video, this docu-movie to anybody, even a liberal. There are many traditional liberals that could watch this and would agree with what's being presented because a lot of it is just common sense. So I think it can be used to awaken a lot of people. I dare say I believe as I was producing this, this is the most important docu-movie you could watch for the 2020 elections coming up.
Well, I agree with that. Yeah.
There are people that know what's in it. There's no one, to be honest with you, no one has seen the whole 8 hours and 22 minutes other than me and now you. We're eager for more feedback now because the docu-movie's just come out. But we have one guy that knows what's in it to a degree because he's seen some of the research and writing, and he's an expert on communism. He said no one has ever produced a docu-movie like this with this many experts. And I said, well, why is that? He said, because nobody has produced one that understands the big picture the way you do, and therefore you went and interviewed the appropriate people, whether we're talking about Rich Higgins, who was formerly with the National Security Council for Trump, whether we're talking about Billy Vaughn, whose son was part of SEAL Team 6 and shot down in August 2011, who's featured in Sabotage, mm-hmm. whether it's Diana West with Red Thread, whether it's Trevor Loudon, whether it's Jeffrey Nyquist, whether it's Dr. Peter Pry, the expert on EMP. I mean, I went and got the best of the best and interviewed them and put them in this. And so I guarantee you there's nothing like this. It gives people the big bird's eye view that we're at a fork in the road. And if we don't correct this problem quickly in the next few years, few months, it's over. We won't come back from this. And one of the things I reveal in this docu-movie is what became the blueprint for communist revolutions around the world took place in Czechoslovakia in 1948, the Velveted Revolution, the Velvet yes. Revolution.
Yep.
And what they did is they put so many Marxists and communists in key places within the government that they could just roll over to a communist nation without firing a shot. And the government, our own government, put out a report and stated that what happened in the Czechoslovakia in 1948 became the model for bringing about communism and a communist revolution all over the globe. And that, in fact, the government report stated that it was shocking. It was shocking what they were doing and what they did in Czechoslovakia and how it became the model of the communists. Now, you think about the deep state and how we had James Comey. And by the way, in this documentary, I reveal that James Comey was tweeting under the handle of Reinhold Niebuhr. Reinhold Niebuhr was a Christian Marxist, okay? He's tweeting under that handle, and yep. I show you the screenshots,
yep.
Okay? He's praising him, writing papers on him when he was in school, a Marxist. You have John Brennan of the CIA director who voted for Gus Hall, a communist, yet he became the CIA director. You have Barack Obama who liked Reinhold Niebuhr, a Christian Marxist. Hillary Clinton likes Reinhold Niebuhr. What's very interesting is I also reveal that many of our leading evangelicals, like Tim Keller, who's planting thousands of these social justice socialist churches around the country with others, they all like Reinhold Niebuhr, a Christian Marxist. Isn't that interesting? In this documentary, I tie together the Christian Marxist thought leaders between the deep state and the government and the evangelical deep state. And I show you in this film the two groups are working together. And I tie it together and I prove it. But the 1948 Czechoslovakia revolution, our own government years ago wrote a report and said, hey, this is scary and this is the model for how to carry out a revolution. Stack the government with bureaucrats who are communist and then you just roll over. Well, we had them at the head of the CIA, the head of the FBI, the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. This is what I'm talking about. This is the deep state and these people are Marxist. We got to quit calling it something like progressive or the left or Democrats. The Democrat Party is a Marxist party. Now, your Republicans are largely communitarians, mixing socialism with capitalism for communitarianism or communism light. But your Democrat Party is open Marxist. And in 1972, Gus Hall, the head of the Communist Party, said, we're going to turn the Democrat Party into a communist party. And he explained how they would do it between the Communist Party, the Democrat Party, and then we'll take what are independent political forces, and that will create a three-legged stool. And the independent political forces are people that are more committed to their cause than they are party. And he said, we can go after them. People interested in animal rights, environmentalism, social justice, globalism, immigration, whatever it is, we'll go grab those independent political forces, people that are interested in a cause more than a party, and we'll pick up their cause and bring them, and that'll be one of the three legs. Then you had the Democrat Party, which he said was the liberal wing of the Democrat Party, and then the Communist Party. Well, guess what? There's no longer a liberal wing of the Democrat Party. It is now a Marxist party, and I prove it in this docu-movie Siege at siegethemovie.com. But the model was the 1948 Czechoslovakian Revolution. They have more communists and Marxists in power than most Americans believe. These are not progressives. These are not leftists. These are not, liberal thinkers. These are Marxists. Go read what they're writing and then compare it to the Communist Manifesto. They're Marxist. In fact, we're living, as I conclude the docu-movie, we're living in a post-communist America. I know that people like Mark Levin want to say we live in a post-constitutional America, and he's right. But we live in a post-communist America.
What do you mean by that? I mean, if you don't mind, explain that just a little bit.
Because they have accomplished more than they ever thought they could.
Okay.
The communists never dreamed in the 1930s and 40s the American people would agree to go as far as they have gone. You're talking about transgenders and paying for transgender surgeries for prisoners. You're talking about the military paying for transgender sexual reassignment surgeries. You're talking about sex changes for five-year-olds. I mean, they never dreamed the American people would sit still for this kind of thing. And yet we have.
And yet here we are. One of the things that you point out in this, and I don't think that this would come as a surprise to anyone, but maybe some. June 19th, 1962, you had Nikita Khrushchev foretelling where America finds itself today, saying, and I quote, the United States will eventually fly the communist red flag. The American people will hoist it themselves. And isn't that what we're seeing today?
Yeah, in the documentary, when I came across that quote, I thought, And so I went and I searched out until I found Americans in Philadelphia and Boston City Hall, and I show you the footage of Boston City Hall, they're raising the communist red China flag at Boston City Hall. In 1962, Lenin said the American people will hoist the communist flag themselves, and we're doing it. In 2019, fall of 2019, that's exactly what happened, raising the communist China red flag. By the way, Lenin also said this, quote, before he died, about 1924, quote, 1924 exactly, he said, quote, first we will take Eastern Europe, then the masses of Asia, then we will encircle the United States, which will be the last bastion of capitalism. We will not have to attack. It will fall like an overripe fruit into our hands, end quote. Well, in the documentary, I explained how that happened. How did they take Eastern Europe? Because at the end of World War II, we went to the negotiation tables to conclude the war, and we gave Stalin Eastern Europe. That's how they got East Germany.
Yep.
Gave it to him. And that was the last war we won. Then we went in and we were invited to come in and help maintain the liberty and freedom in China so the communists couldn't take over China. And we decided we would just, as the one Secretary of State said, let the dust settle. We didn't get involved. And we let the communists take China in 1949 and bring 700 million people under the control of the Chinese communists. And now today that's 1.5 billion enslaved. So we didn't do anything about that. Then that set up the Korean War. We didn't win there. We could have, but we didn't. And I explained in the film with interviews from former three-star, four-star generals why we didn't win, which then set up Vietnam. We didn't win there. We could have. We were not blockading their ships from resupplying. We weren't blockading Soviet ships from resupplying the Viet Cong. We even, we have a guy who's a former Green Beret who lost both legs below the knee in this docu-movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that 50% of our casualties in Vietnam were due to booby traps. Well, guess who sent the plans for how to build a nitroglycerin plant to the former Soviet Union? America. And they were building nitroglycerin chemicals and then shipping that into the Viet Cong, which they were using those booby traps to kill our boys. We were continuing to give aid and comfort and money to the enemy, literally money and technology, to kill our boys, our men. And the men in Vietnam, and one of them is on our documentary, Udell Myers, U.S. Marine, he's carrying lead. And the weapons and arms provided by China shipped into Vietnam, and we could have blockaded it, but we would not blockade it. You will hear men on there saying we weren't allowed to shoot their enemy planes sitting on the ground. We were not allowed to bomb anti-aircraft missile sites before they were operative, before they could shoot down our planes. We had to know. We had to wait until they shot down our planes and killed our people before we could go get them. We couldn't shoot until shot at. We couldn't shoot at enemy planes until they shot at us. Look, there was no desire to win Vietnam or the Korean War. Why? Because as I revealed in the docu-movie, we had communists whispering into the ears of our leading members, including the president. We were surrounded by treason from within. And I quote my friend, the late John Stormer, none dare call it treason, quite a bit in this docu-movie. We lost Vietnam. We lost the Korean War. We are losing the War on Terror. By the way, I reveal in this docu-movie, the whole War on Terror has been set up and funded by Russia. The fall of the Berlin Wall, the collapse of communism was fake. They were in trouble economically, but they predicted that they would do this. We have documented in the film, Siege the Movie, at siegethemovie.com, a former KGB agent, Galutsin, wrote his book in 1982 and made multiple predictions. The Berlin Wall didn't collapse until November 1989, 7 years later. All of his predictions have come true. People thought he was crazy when it came out in 82. He said they'll collapse communism, make it a fake collapse, so we rush to the table, bring in foreign aid, then our corporations will run in there, and they will take our technology. And that's exactly what they've done. We stopped paying attention to them. Corporations ran in there, gave them all kinds of technology that could be used for commercial aircraft, but then they turned around and converted it for military aircraft. They're grabbing up all of our secrets. We opened the gates for them to come into America. They flood America with KGB agents, as the former KGB agent I interviewed on this documentary says. And he says Putin understands two things, political correctness and religion, and he's using both of them to bring your country to a second-class nation, religion and political correctness. So we didn't pay attention to them anymore. They're not a threat anymore, we're told. They've collapsed. And while we're not paying attention to them, they start funding and training terrorists like al-Awazari of al-Qaeda. And we have guys on there, including the former KGB agent, talking about Carlos the Jackal, al-Awazari, and others that were being brought into Russia, trained, and sent out to fight. The Kremlin is funding and training and has been funding and training the terrorists since the 1930s. But our modern-day war on terror has come from Putin and Russia to keep the price of oil up high to rebuild his military. And now he's on to sixth-generation warfare, as we reveal in this docu-movie.
And you've done a great job. Brandon, I'm afraid we're going to have to stop it right there. What an incredible insight into the docu-movie SiegeTheMovie.com. The links to the movie will be in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com. Brandon, thank you so very much for the gift of the movie, for creating this. And I would urge everyone to grab it. I know you've got a commitment. God bless you, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Appreciate your time.
All right. Folks, I'm going to tell you, get the movie. I don't even know how to describe this except to say, if my wife can sit there, with me, because she's not a documentary kind of person. Eric the Tech will vouch for that. But if she can sit there for, 3 hours and be glued, to the screen and say occasionally, you know, I didn't know that. Or, you know, I didn't realize, oh, now I see how this is connecting. In fact, and this is true. I'm not making this up. I just ordered this afternoon two of these, docu-movies for friends for the holiday for Christmas, because I think it's that important. And usually books sometimes I do, but the DVDs, I know people sometimes will say, wow, that's a long time to sit and watch, but this, you've got specific, chapters, if you will, and it's very interesting. All right. So, again, the information, and watch the trailers too. The information is going to be in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com. All right. In closing, one of the things I really want people to kind of keep their eyes on, and you may think, well, this is just, I didn't hear about this, and maybe you're not going to hear about this, or maybe you didn't hear about this, or maybe you didn't, maybe perhaps you just underestimated the significance of this. It was yesterday, I think it was, maybe early this morning, I don't know, but Devin Nunes was talking about Adam Schiff's really self-created authority for creating congressional subpoenas for private phone records. Now let that sink in for a second. Here you've got Adam Schiff, House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence Chairman, this pencil neck geek. I started out this program by talking about him, randomly starting out to issue subpoenas for telephone information. Devin Nunes, I guess Devin Nunes was on Tucker Carlson last evening talking about this. Again, think about this. Adam Schiff, as chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Remember, elections have consequences. We lost the House. The House leadership changed. House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Adam Schiff became the chairman. Now he's issuing subpoenas for telephone information. Do you see a problem with this? I see a problem with this. Under what authority can Congress arbitrarily issue subpoenas for private phone conversations? Now listen, of private citizens, of journalists, and fellow politicians. Where is this in the Constitution, of which Nancy Pelosi spoke at 9 a.m. this morning? 9 a.m. It's redundant. Sorry. Can Nunes now start sending subpoenas for the phone records of Oh, I don't know. Michael Isikoff. Right around the time of the Flynn phone call leak. Can Congress publish those call records as part of some possible inquiry into the leak? And by the way, can we cross-reference to identify the FBI leaker? Sundance from Conservative Treehouse writes on this extensively under that headline, Devin Nunes discusses impeachment. Folks, thank you very much for joining me today. I hope you have a great night. May God bless. Good night.